Future travelers, and welcome to another episode of Tales of Teyvat, a Genshin lore podcast. Last week, we dove into the history of Watsusumi Island as we discussed their fearless leader, Sangonamiya Kokumi.
This week, we're going to 300 BCE. That's right, it's Genshin's take on Alexander the Great, the remnants of Gorabad.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the DEY days of our lives. Are you digging for grains of visual references to accompany this episode? Well, hitch a ride with a genie and head on over to our website. That's talesofteyvat.com, where you can pore through our tombs and vaults at your leisure.
Our site also includes links to our past seasons and special episodes, artist spotlights from the community for every episode, and wallpapers to download.
Finally, feel free to email us at talesofteyvatpod@gmail.com to let us know what you think of this week's episode and what topics you'd like to see in the future. Before we jump into the sands of the desert, I wanted to let travelers know that we haven't forgotten to check our mail. Unfortunately, Kirara changed her hours, so stick around for the end of the episode to hear from travelers like you. Now, it's time to get sand stuck in our boots for eternity, because it seems like every season we have more to say about the Sumeru Desert.
It just keeps on a-blowin'.
Keeps on giving, bitch.
A lot buried in there.
I love deserts!
So we started our desert excursion in season 2 when we talked about the three gods of the desert, which would be King Deshret, Lord Rukadevada, and Nabu Malikada, the goddess of flowers.
I realized I should have brought both geckos out. Travelers, as you know, the gecko army increases. I have 9 geckos now from the 7, from the 2, from the 1. Keep up. The newest additions, Deshret, our lord and savior, fuckboy, and then my sweet baby girl, Nabu, who has escaped twice.
Oh, no.
Like, she's escaped life in Genshin.
Yeah. She's running away from her consequences. But that's okay. But, oh, man, I should have brought them. I should have brought them out.
So a quick refresher on the three gods. They lived in harmony for many years until King Deshret decided that he didn't want to live in harmony anymore. And he wanted to find forbidden knowledge. So, very long story short, but the goddess of flowers decided to yeet herself in order to give him forbidden knowledge. And then Rukadevada was like, hey, I'm out. And she went and found the rainforest. And that's the three gods. Eventually, Deshret was ate by my number one fan, a pep.
Yes.
Always a pet.
In order to say, help Rukadevada save the world.
Yeah, and if you need any further information on that, you can go back and listen to the episode in season 2. But then we continued our journey in season 3 when we talked about Lillipar.
The surprise forced incest episode.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones and the House of the Dragon could never. I mean, they could. House of the Dragon has, but also the Habsburgs still got them on it.
And I think something important to know from both episodes that will help you understand this episode a little bit more is that King Deshret got mad at Lillipar because of her, like, 3-generational plan to destroy Gorabad. And when he figured it out at the end of Gorabad's tale, he went and ripped her into shreds and was like, there's a bottle over here, there's a bottle over here, and he split her soul like the guy in Buffy where they couldn't kill him, so they just destroyed his body and separated it across the earth.
Yeah. But what's funny is that was like thwarted, and it's like I think they just left his body parts on a boat
at that point. Just sink him.
Yeah, that guy's probably gonna come back to life in like season 7, isn't he? Well, what are we on season 4? Like
season 3.
This is why you cut up the body, you put the body parts in fresh cement, throw the cement into the ocean.
Why not just put them in some chess pieces?
I mean, that's what the first and second descender did.
Exactly.
Was that a chest piece or a chest?
A chest.
Chest pieces, yeah, into brass chest pieces. Or, or into implants, whatever you prefer. But where we left the story of the desert with her being separated into little pieces and ruining her husband's life through their children.
Yeah. And the life of her son and daughter.
Yeah, but the goal was to ruin her husband's life. She would be really good on like Housewives of Teyvat.
Oh yeah. My God.
I mean, Oedipus Rex has an opening.
True. I wonder if Teyvat will get their own TV show come Natlon, where we just see all the desperate housewives together. She could also be good in the Cell Block Tango. Just saying. He had it coming. He had it coming. Little Bart's like, I predicted it 300,000 years ago. Anyway, so this path brings us to the city of Tuleytula, which is a wild name.
Yeah, and before we get too specific about that particular city, just to sort of backtrack on the end of that Lillipar storyline, that sort of ends with her husband that she wanted revenge on is dead. Her two children unknowingly got married to each other, and they had a child named Shiruye, her children being Shireen and Kisra / Parvez Ravan. And basically what happens is their child, Shiruye, ends up killing his father, Parvez Ravan. We don't really know what happens to Shireen or Shirin, Ed Shirin, as we like to call her. But that sort of ends that whole like dynasty and everything. And Gurabad is basically almost like withering away into ruins. And then a bunch of years pass. And then there's this man named Shah Ramshar, who shows up and is allegedly the true heir of Shiruye and is returning from exile many years later. And Shah Ramshar builds these seven towers in cities around the desert. And those towers, you know, the cities sort of grow and continue to draw people in. And those were called the Cities of the Seven Towers. Very original name.
I know. They're very creative.
Yes, yes. And they each had a king in each of the seven cities. And then Ramshar was like the king of kings.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Oh, my fucking God. I can't stop with the Game of Thrones references.
It's a lot. It's very Game of Thrones.
Seven kings, yeah. Seven kingdoms. And one to rule them all? A Targaryen?
It could be Game of Thrones. It could be Lord of the Rings. It could be a lot.
It could be a lot of things. Seven is a very important number in just everything, regardless of what seven could possibly mean, depending on the culture. But like, oh my fucking God. Just like, yes, they're all these kings, but they're all united under one mega king.
Right.
God damn it.
And we don't know all seven of the cities. We know a few of them, right? There's Tuleytula, there's Saleh, there's Ikanum, and then there's Organa. And then we don't know the other three, right?
We do, because it's Gurabad, and we have Akhtam, and there's only like a very short reference of the other one, which is Sataria.
That would be after, these all happened after Gurabad fell.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so Gurabad does not count in this situation.
I don't know if it does though, because I'm pretty sure Shah Ramshar lived in Gurabad. And as we'll get into, some of these other kings that start popping up throughout this whole new saga, some of them do stay and live in Gurabad. Like it kind of has, you know, even though it's not the grand kingdom that it used to be back in the days of Ormuzd, it is still occasionally thriving and then, you know, withering away and then coming back again. It like keeps having comebacks. So yeah, it could be one of those. And then, so you're thinking Beit Raha is one of them. And what was the other one you said, Al?
Sitaria, right? The where it's stated like the long lost dancers of Sitaria.
Oh, I don't know.
I will say with Gurabad, I kind of saw it as a like, this kingdom sucks, we're moving out type of thing. And I felt like it wasn't included in those cities, like with the towers. Like it felt like it was the external, like we're going out and building towers. Screw Gurabad. This is the new symbol for kingdoms and nations to unite under. I could be very wrong, but I felt like, you know, when a city becomes less popular, like people still move there. Like I feel like Detroit is like that.
We can't have shit in Detroit. How dare you?
There's some nice places in Detroit. In Detroit.
The places in Detroit that are worth going to don't count because it's not Detroit.
Well, I'm sure there are places like that in Gurabad.
It's more reminiscent to what happened to the Macedonian Empire after Alexander the Great died, where you had this empire uniting these city-states or these like specific regions and locations, and the second they have like this unifying force is gone, and in this case would be like the supreme power of Gurabad, you still have the city-states and they're their own collective. A lot of people can compare this to in the Hellenistic era, you have Athens, you have Sparta. They're different city-states, but they were once united under a larger empire.
Okay.
They aren't at the same glory. So, I mean, they're more than likely people in different city-states were like, fuck Garabad. Like, we don't, like, the Florida Gators are like, fuck the Seminoles. Like, shit like that. Or how Sparta and Athens were like so cutthroat to each other. Oh my God, there's so much Greek in this desert, and I love it.
But continue on, Brandon, sorry.
No, I think that's, I was good. I was just sort of giving the rundown of like what happened before we got into like the individual cities, if you will. So wait, just to verify the seven city states, there was one other city mentioned in the lore though that I read about, which is called Beit Raha. It was a famous city, but I don't know if it was one of the main seven.
Wait, can you spell that?
B-E-I-T and then R-A-H-A.
With a space?
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure that's Hebrew.
It had a leader named Nazrul.
Nazrul? I'm pretty sure Beit is means house, like a house. Because Beit Midrash is the house of learning.
But anyway, so I guess some of the city states confirmed. We have Garabad, Tulli Tulla, Iconium, Salle, and Organa. And then two of the others were a little confused on what they are. It might be Akhtamun, maybe Sitaria, maybe this Beit Raha. But yeah, some of the lore is a little murky in that area.
A lot of ones that we can truly confirm is because these city-states have been continuously settled, like continuously lived in, like Organa and Akhetinam, because there's more history around that. We have a lot more people that can tell us the history of these locations because they've been living there.
Yeah, and we do know that I think even when Parvez Ravan was leading Garabad after he, you know, got rid of his father, at least a couple, if not more, of the seven city states, they were actually like bringing tributes to Garabad in their name. So they were around like even before Garabad fell.
That makes a lot of sense, just in a historic stamp. When we think of Babylon, which I will be referencing Babylon a lot and Baghdad specifically, but when you have kind of like this large political power, whether it be military or just like they're a heavy trade city, most of the time you have smaller city states or even neighboring city states kind of converge with that to become like what we know as empires.
And Al, would you mind, before we jump too far into it, just telling travelers a little bit about Babylon in case they're not up on their world history?
So Babylon in the Babylonian Empire was probably one of the earliest parts of civilization that we historically kind of resonate with in, you know, in BCE, which is before Common Era. And it was pretty much in the middle of what is modern day Iraq. If you remember the Fertile Crescent, It's basically the perfect living conditions. And this was kind of a city-state that thrived. It had one of the first world wonders, which is the Gardens of Babylon, which no longer exist. But it was kind of the first point of rapid human development when it came to the process of a civilization, a city, if you will.
Perfect. Thank you, Al.
It's hard to summarize Babylon in like a little bit.
So that brings us to the favorite. Would you call Tulli Tulla the favorite of the city states?
Yeah, I think it was described as one of the greatest ones, if not the greatest. I mean, it definitely comes up more than the others in the lore.
Every time I heard it, I always thought of the Emerald City from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of. Yeah.
It is. It's the city of emeralds.
And sapphires, right?
And sapphires. But it says that the city was dotted with buildings roofed with sapphire domes and adorned with emerald gardens of blooming trees and flowing fountains.
Yes. It's very, very elaborate.
It's bougie.
But in the lore, it's also known as the home of the wise Tignarians, which, bringing up Babylon, brings me to Baghdad. And when you think of like, oh, this beautiful city that's very entrenched in like academics and knowledge and wisdom, you think of the House of Wisdom in Baghdad, or even further back to the ancient city of Persepolis. So it's just, oh yes, give me the Easter eggs. Pay attention to history, folks.
And just because you brought up the Tignarians, Al, to travelers listening, yes, Tignari is a descendant of the Tignarians. They are his people, and they were a race of people who followed King Deshret for many years, and they lived in the desert. It's interesting, though, because most of them had light-colored fur and large ears, which made them really good at living in the hot. And Tignari's father, in one of his voice lines, actually says that because Tignari has dark fur, he will not do well in the desert.
Scientifically accurate. I guess we could say the ancient Tignarians are more aligned to what we would consider a fennec fox.
Right. Yeah, so they are considered to be fennec foxes. But what's really cute is that they had this nickname of being the largest desert dog.
I thought that was my nickname.
That largest desert dog was your nickname?
Largest desert dog, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds accurate.
I'm going to remember that. I'm going to write that one down. I'm going to start calling you that, get you name tags with that. But Tignari, as a child, was like super confused about this. And so he does some research to look into it, and he finds out that his race is also called Valukashuna, which is assumed to be like a fox of sort. It does Valukashuna, from what I could tell, and Al, you let me know if I'm wrong, doesn't have any IRL comparisons I could really find.
I wonder where the rest of Tainari's people are.
Well, basically, when King Deshret, you know, got eight, and calamity came across the world and Deshret's realm was destroyed, the Valukashuna, which is Tignari's people, they only survived because of the Dendro Archon. She like blessed them with the green fur that they have today. And that's when you find out that the darker fur means they'll do better in the desert, stuff like that. So they must have been maybe black fur or dark brown initially, probably fit in more with the desert. They probably actually looked like the foxes we see that Kaveh falls in love with.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Tignari, kind of as a kid, is like having an existential crisis because he's like, I'm a fox, I'm not a dog. But then as he's reading, he finds out that the Aranara are the ones that called them largest desert dog. So he's like, well, from what I've heard about the Aranara, they're really not that bright. So they probably from far away mixed us up.
The shade.
He was nice about it, which is interesting because Tignari talks a lot about the Aranara in one of his voice lines, but he's always talks about how he's never encountered one. But no one in the game really talks about where the Tignarians went. And the Tignarians were described as smart and bright and genius people. And it's interesting because Tignari and his parents are no different. Tignari's mom is a paleontologist and his dad studies bugs. So like they're smart people. And Tignari obviously is a smart person too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting. And Tignari suggests in one of his voice lines that his dad is currently out in the desert doing some sort of bug study. I don't know what. Maybe he's looking in the scarabs for his son-in-law. I'm not sure.
He's like gathering dung for the dung beetles.
He's like, if I gather them, the scarabs will come and Sino will be happy. He will ascend to level 90. I'm not really sure. And it's interesting because unlike Star Rail, when we're in the Lufa, we don't see anyone else with fox ears in Genshin. We have dogs. We have cats. We have Melusines, but we don't have foxes.
I mean, right. Wait, we could have had a fox beforehand. We don't know what sucrose is.
Actually, they think sucrose might be a Valukashuna as well. And it's considering that she has a lighter green fur, she might actually do well in the desert. That is like a theory amongst Genshin fans, but there's no confirmation since we also haven't met her parents. And also, it would seem even that sucrose has some second guessing in her ancestry. As she was testing Diona, so like, wasn't she like researching Diona at one point to see if they could be related?
Oh, right.
It makes me wonder if sucrose might even be adopted. We don't really know a lot about sucrose. We know that her parents and her live in Mondstadt. We know that she had friends who disappeared. But what if they were friends in an orphanage? I don't know.
I mean, it's possible.
We'll have to wait for the Sucrose episode.
There's few things I've got with Veluca, and it could mean sand. It could also be a reference to a specific region of Bangladesh. And Shuna can be either Lord Indra or Lord Shiva, or it could mean goddess gracious. So it really will depend if you go from use Sanskrit or if you fall into Japanese a little bit, because Shuna is also Japanese.
So basically they're foxes that felt like they were blessed by the gods.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be sand, blessed by the god of sand type of a thing. Mm. It's unsure, not knowing if Veluca could mean more. I mean, it'll just depend, which makes me so mad because I wish Sanskrit was a bit easier to understand.
Well, enough on the Tinyarians, because we have not talked about the Emerald City and the Wizard of Oz nearly enough in this episode yet. I do feel like we've, after doing all the research for this episode, that we did like follow the yellow brick road out to Tule Tula. I do want to, before we jump into all the family lore and stuff about Tule Tula, I did just want to give travelers an idea of where it currently is. So obviously it's ruins. There is no Emerald City out and about in the desert, at least not yet. But the Garden of Endless Pillars, which is a domain in the desert, is considered to be the remains and what is left. It is located north of the Deseret Mausoleum and left of the Dune of Kurosis.
So like the far west.
It's near a hole in the ground. Well,
not the big twisty hole.
No, like the other little one. Hole. We'll make sure Tiff puts it on the website.
It's a domain that is surrounded by five pyro monuments.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like the one of the weirdest puzzles that I've seen in the desert. You have to light up like the pyro towers in a certain direction. But in the description for the Garden of the Endless Pillars, it does say that, or suggest that, the city was protected by a white tree and the ley lines. So while much of the desert was destroyed by sandstorms or other happenings, this city seemed to not be touched. I'm assuming the white tree is Irminsul.
Yes, of course.
And I would assume that has something to do with Ruka Devata, since she also like helped the Tinyarians. But I'm not 100% sure. It really sucks because there isn't a lot of information about the Tinyarians, and there's not a lot of information about the creation of Tule Tula.
Well, in the Tule Tula's remembrance in the Catalyst, it actually tells the story of when, during Nabu Malakata's little exile journey, at least that we assume that it was her during the Goddess of Flowers, when she was being exiled and kind of walking, and all the genie kind of appeared like from her, the water that was made from her feet and stuff like that. It's also in this Catalyst, it talks of the fact that there was also a sapphire city rose from her tears. And that, you know, that's where the Tinyarians were, ended up going to. So it kind of all goes back to Nabu.
Well, it makes a lot of sense because it's also the longest, I believe, the longest surviving of the city states.
I wouldn't say that, just because of the ones that we are going to talk about are still occupied.
Well, yeah, I mean, Organa. I just mean of that era.
It
was kind of like filled with the people of that era the longest. I mean, a lot of that is also because of Zephos was like the protector of Tule Tula for a while.
Right.
So it was when he got killed that the city really kind of fell into ruin.
So what exactly do we know about Tule Tula? We know it was built by Shamrashar, the Seven Towers. We know the Tinyarans live there.
That's basically it.
The original king died, then the other king died, then the next person died, then this person died. I
have the whole saga like ready to go, whatever. I don't know if you wanted to go through the cities first and then jump into the actual saga.
Look, we want the drama.
I just can't believe all of this just exists within artifacts, weapons, and like murals.
Those damn obelisks.
And the obelisks. We're going to take all this stuff and make it so obscure in the desert. And it's like it becomes almost like a crazy treasure hunt.
It's like you
Exactly.
become an archaeologist, which is kind of fun.
While trying not to get killed by scorpions.
Yeah, while trying not to get killed by scorpions
Which
or
I
the
mean
scorpion
happened
king.
to Indiana Jones too.
We're Indiana Jones. I'm an anthropologist.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why don't you take us quickly into the other cities first, then? And then we can jump into the grand old.
Yeah, and I know Al has a lot of like parallels drawn up for these cities. So
I
the other
do.
cities that we know of that are definitely among the seven city-states. One is Salae, the Electrum City of Warriors. All I really know about that one is it was ruled by Turhan Kagan. It was home to a race called the Thamudians.
Which is an actual tribe in pre-Islamic Arabia.
Oh, well, in the game, they were known for their golden eyes.
Ooh, purdies.
Which is pretty cool.
And then one of the other city-states, of course, is Icanum, which we've talked about in previous episodes. That was the city that was created by the goddess of flowers or the djinn. And it's also called the Amphitheater City or the City of the Moon Maiden. And that at this time was ruled by someone named Garshas.
Iconom is based off of the actual Iconom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then have Organa, which is also known as the City of 29 Days. Those were leaders of pirate crews that formed an alliance. And that Organa is still around today because it is now known as Port Ormos.
You think that Beto could actually come from there?
Yeah. I didn't realize how pirates there were in this game.
There are a lot of pirates.
Did
It's
you hear the disdain in her voice?
great. I mean, I like Jack Sparrow and all, but
Well, I gotta hate on Beto and Kazuha.
I like Beto.
Yeah.
Kazuha is a wandering samurai.
Yeah, but now he is a pirate
He's an
on the
honorary pirate.
Crux. I'm an honorary pirate in this game.
Mikey D, Luffy, let's go.
Really, I didn't really hear
How
so
dare
many
you?
pirates in this
What was the
game.
pirate movie rated? Arg.
Let's
Oh.
not do that.
Sino strikes again.
I'm here all week.
Yeah, so those are the main ones that are sort of in the lore that I scrounged up about the seven city states and like the whole new drama saga. Those are like the key players in terms of the cities.
Which city do you think you're from, Brandon?
Oh, I would say Tule Tula. I mean, it sounds lovely.
Oh, so you think you're bougie? You think you'd be privileged enough to live in the Emerald City?
No, I mean, it's where I would want to
I
live.
think I'm from the Pirate Nation.
If you were asking me like what I would actually be, it's probably one of the ones that aren't even listed. I wouldn't even be in one of the major cities. I would be in like some like hole in the ground.
You'd probably just be with nomads.
I'd be out in the boonies. Yeah. I mean, I did grow up kind of in the boonies, so.
I feel like I could grow up a pirate. I'm a parent of divorce.
I could see it. I think that's why you said it the way that you said it. I think you were, re really like identifying in a way. Like, oh, that's it. Just it's too real.
You'd look cute in an eye patch.
I don't know if I could survive in an eye patch. I'd be like, take this shit off of me. I can't see. But a pirate hat and like a billowing white shirt, like with the buttons undone on the top, I'm great.
Yeah, you could rock that
A
look.
corset.
A peg leg, no problem.
Arrgh. Like, what happened? I'm like, oh, I just painted my foot. This is my leg, guys. Don't worry. But anyway, continue on.
That's all I had for like the cities that I made note of. Al, I didn't know if you wanted to talk any more about real life parallels
I
or.
mean, there are so many, specifically with Salé, because it's based off of Hergra. I think it's Hergra, but it's traditionally known as the Mada in Salea, where a particular prophet named Celia, or S-A-L-I-H instead of E-H in this case, was a prophet who came to the city and basically was like, all you guys are polytheistic, meaning belief of many gods, and basically said the one true god was going to kill you all. Well, a disaster happened and those that followed him survived, so they named the city after him. But it's said that any time you go past this city in the modern day, you are supposed to cry for those that have died. To me, I found that really interesting because this is also where supposedly Deshret fell.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The domain that is basically the ruins of the city is called the City of Gold, and it's right above Ahaj Nisut, a specific temple, and just when you click on it, it opens up and it says, this stronghold, once protected by seven mighty battlements, crumbled overnight when King Deshret fell, and an age of chaos ensued. Gold-eyed warriors once stood guard over watchtowers of gilded luster, now only a desiccated temple built upon sundered rocks remain, more akin to a tomb of an age of radiance long lost. Which is pretty impactful because we think of these ancient cities and we only see them as the ruins of today when we look from the Middle East all the way to ancient Greece, and we look at ancient Egypt, and we look really just everywhere where all these ancient civilizations were, and they're ruins, but they once were bustling cities full of life, full of culture and texture and color. So it just makes me feel so sad sometimes. Anyway, my anthropologist is coming out and I need to take a chill pill.
I like it that each city has sort of its own like theme. You got like the nerd city, the warrior city, the genie city.
Wait, which one's the nerd city?
Tule Tula.
Oh, then you're definitely going to be there.
We got pirate city. We've got outcast city.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Like,
they all kind of remind me of like different cities that you like learn about in like kids shows and stuff, like the City of Lost Toys. And I don't know, or I guess it's the Island of Lost Toys. Like, you know, they always consider it like the Island of Misfits. It makes me think a little bit of Peter Pan with like the pirates for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of it is inspired by that.
I mean, more than like, I mean, the fact that like Iconum is literally just the exact same city, which beautiful ruins. It's in modern day Afghanistan, right at like the border of the Hindu Kush mountain range, which is like right before you get to the Himalayas and some really dangerous mountains. It's not just, you know, a coinky dink that they've used these names and used like Sanskrit and like old Egyptian to create this once long lived powerful empire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's also at the end of the day, with like how much these people were at each other's throats, it is also very Game of Thrones.
So much. Oh my God. Wait a minute. I know exact. Hold up. My brain went on a full 6 second tangent of like, all of these, we can put these into houses. I swear we can. That'll be another episode.
But I think we could jump into Tule Tula.
Yeah.
So Tule Tula, as Brendan mentioned earlier, was built by Sham Rashar, who built the Seven Towers, blah, 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 blah. So the first ruler was King Humayun? Humayun?
Wait, what?
Humayun?
Humayun.
Humayun. Humayun. Humayun. Humayun.
Yeah, Shah Ramshar again is like the king of kings who created the seven towers and helped establish the cities of the seven towers. And Shah Ramshar was like the king of kings. He later had a son named Artaxir who took the throne after Ramshar died. Artaxir died and the main throne was taken over by Turan Kagan or Kagan. Kagan, who was the ruler of Saleh at the time. And so he took over and ruled all the seven kingdoms as regent. But Kagan was eventually killed and his three sons were also executed. And the leader of Tule Tula, Humayun, he married Ramshar's princess and became the ruler of all the seven kingdoms until he was decapitated in Salé during the Jin uprising, which I love it that there's just this mention of the Jin uprising and I couldn't find anything about it whatsoever.
It's literally one word.
Like one mention. Yeah. And so, yeah. So these, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. Like these people were very bloodthirsty when it came to the throne.
Some could say that they were Baratheon like. I'm sorry, but it is true. It's like, anyway.
But yeah, it says that they're like within just a short time, you had up to like 30 kings that kind of rose up, and within just a few years, they're all dead.
Which, that sucks just for any of the common folk, because you know people just be being killed left and right in the street for no fucking reason. Who are you loyal to? This king. That king's been dead for 20 minutes. Oh, fuck. I'm dead now too. Shit.
So Humayun, you know, he gets killed in Salé during the Jin uprising. Then you have Garshasp, who was the ruler of Aikunum. And Garshasp drove all these like encroaching bandits out of the capital, and he became the new king of kings. And he decided to move the capital from Gurabad to somewhere else, which we're not really sure where, but I would say it's probably safe to assume Aikunum. And then Garshasp was eventually, guess what, killed, and the capital burned for 7 days before the people there fled and settled into Tule Tula. So I'm assuming it was Aikunum. I don't know 100% sure, but it seems like that might have been the end of Aikunum, and then the people had to leave there and go to Tule Tula. Meanwhile, the king of Organa, his name was Muzaffar Day. He became renowned and feared across the land as a really violent pillager. So he was just roaming around, taking over like all these cities. He killed a lot of people. He enslaved hundreds of thousands of people.
The hound.
Yeah.
Not the hound. The mountain. Fuck.
And so he takes over this famous city, Beit Raha, killing their leader, Nasrul, and showing off Nasrul's head to the people and like laughing about it. He enslaved a lot of people, pillaged the whole city. Nasrul's daughter, Nazira, ended up becoming that city's new leader after they got bored and left. But going back to Tule Tula, there's someone there named Gudarz, and Gudarz fought this group of rebels that were all vying for the kingdom and was somehow aided by a mirage. Don't know really what that means, but that mirage helped him succeed and drive out the rebels. And so Gudarz then leaves Tule Tula. He goes back to Gurabad, which had been empty, and he invites the people to return. So he basically becomes like the new ruler. He basically reestablished Gurabad as the capital. He had like a younger brother that was in Gurabad who fled in fear of him for some reason, mm-hmm. Not sure why. And then Gudarz eventually declares himself King Saleb Dale. So he's like, I'm King Saleb, even though my name used to be Gudarz. And allegedly, Deshret would manifest before him and like gift him this, you know, the power of an illusion, which helped convince everyone that he was legit. He becomes the king of kings. And then the following 10 years are actually really prosperous because of King Saleb. And they're referred to as the years of fine rain at sunset.
It's so dramatic.
So, but also dramatic. I'm here for it. Like, let's go.
At least they had a peaceful 10 years because it didn't last longer than that.
They didn't get a peaceful half a day.
the timetable on these empires, fuck.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Organa, so they basically make nice with King Saleb, and they come to Gurabad and they sign a treaty where they're like, you got to stop pillaging all of the stuff. And so they come to an agreement where Var is like, all right, I'll stop pillaging and we'll play nice. And then, you know, in turn, the king agreed to stop taking unfairly from the people of Organa. So they're playing nice. Eventually, King Saleb has a son named Prince Hojir, and Prince Hojir died by drinking poisoned wine. And Saleb was so overcome with grief that he demanded 1,000 slaves to be buried alongside his son. And allegedly 100 nobles were so filled with grief that they also drank the poisoned wine to kill themselves, you know, in honor of Hozier, which is just the wildest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, like what? I mean, really, what is that? What does that give you?
I know.
Dude's dead. You're like, I gotta honor him.
Like, we really just gotta pay this homage, you guys. Pass this around.
Make a statue, paint something. You don't need to kill yourself.
Put it in the Valley of Kings.
Don't drink the Kool-Aid, you guys.
Don't drink it.
I mean, it makes sense, and this is very fucked up, but in many ancient civilizations, when it came to like high-powered official like death rites and burial practices, they would have people, usually servants or even some of the wives, they would commit suicide to be entombed with that person. But the most, I think, is personal, like, servants of said, it was just slaves.
Well, yeah, 100 nobles actually killed themselves. But then the king, King Saleb, he demanded that 1,000 slaves be buried alongside his son.
Which, that is, holy shit.
That's scary. And so that, of course, creates all this intense infighting within Gurabat. So the 10 years of peace are over. The people are like, what the hell? You like killed 1,000 people just so they could be buried with your son? I'm not having this. And then Saleb starts getting nervous that the people are kind of uprising. So he invites Muzaffar, the pillager of old, to Gurabat to help. But then he found out that Muzaffar was like, now is my chance. And he's like pillaging his way across the desert towards Gurabat. So Saleb gets nervous. He reaches out to his estranged brother, brings him back into Gurabat. They join forces to fight Muzaffar. But ultimately, Muzaffar is able to destroy the city, and he kills all of Saleb's relatives. He allegedly also kills King Saleb himself, but it says that he ordered the king's eyes to be brought to him so that they could once again see his city burning.
Oh,
I hate it.
That's rough.
That's some Joffrey level bullshit, and I'm here for that.
I just imagine him holding it with his fingers, like, look at this.
Beyond two little toothpicks, just like, are you seeing that? Let me move it over here. Are you seeing that?
Yeah.
You want some popcorn?
These are some real stand-up guys, I tell you.
Totally.
It's like Deshret died, you know, and like
everyone lost their minds.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
but that's like, you know, originally I was going to make a joke that maybe his spirit went into all of them. But at the same time, like, forbidden knowledge was around now. Who knows who's been like exposed to it? I'm like, are all these guys searching for the answer?
Right.
Did a pep just like fart a few times and they sniffed it up and went a little crazy? Oh, got their own forbidden knowledge.
And Pep was like, I'm gonna fuck them up.
What I want to know is what turned the people of Teyvat of today, who are quite bland, to say the least.
Whoa. Bland. Have you met Dodere?
He's a playable character. I'm talking about NPCs here. We're talking about the larger populace of Lihue and Mansa in Inazuma, where people do not look like they will mass murder each other.
But we've met murderers in this game. That one guy was trying to blow people up.
That was France. It's France.
There was more than just the France serial killer. There was a guy trying to blow people up in Yelan's story quest. Treasure hoarders are always trying to do something wild.
But this is like around with her bombs. Scale.
I mean, Child tried to kill everyone.
Yeah,
Child was doing his job.
Oh, okay. So it was fine.
Just his job.
Just doing his job.
But he's leaving now, so it's fine.
Okay.
Is he?
Yeah, he's abandoning the Fatui after all of his injuries. He's actually being discharged honorably.
He's got to go to the annex.
Let's hope he stays away from the desert mausoleums for a while.
He just needs to talk with Fremenae so Fremenae can build him a new body after he becomes completely exhausted.
So anyway, we have Muzaffar. He basically destroys Gurabat, gets rid of King Saleb, and he decides not to stay in Gurabat, but he also decides not to go back to his hometown of Organa. Instead, he like goes and sets up his own city somewhere else, which I'm not really sure where it is, but I suspect it's in the forest because he has a child named Zumurrud, who is also known as the Verdant Lord. And Zumurrud had a dream when he was just 2 years old, in which the desert was turned into a forest. And it says he was raised in a forest. So I'm assuming they went somewhere in the rainforest when they relocated. But he makes it this goal in his life to convert the desert into the forest, which I thought was interesting. So meanwhile, his dad, Muzaffar, is like, you know what, son, I need you to have as many heirs as possible so that you don't run into this problem that King Saleb had with this like power vacuum, you know, where there's just like everyone just sort of deciding that they want to be the king of kings without anyone having any real claim to the throne. So Zumurrud is like, sure, I'll have 99 kids. So he does. He has 50 sons and 49 daughters.
I hate it.
That's like a Sims problems challenge. And a condiment one.
Each of these was a prince or princess, and they all got their own kingdom. So now you have 99 potential rulers and heirs to the throne. But his most noteworthy children were his sons Muzaddin and Badanah. And his daughter Hanzada Sultan, or his children were very bougie, and they would like march through the desert with their slaves in front of them, planting seeds throughout the desert to grow trees.
I'm dead. They're like, we'll make a forest.
Yeah. Anyway, later, Muzaddin and Badanah, they stopped getting along, big surprise, and their followers began to clash with each other. Badanah eventually became king after their father, Zumurrud, the Verdant Lord, died. And so now you have Badanah as the king of kings. And Badanah starts seeing this very ambitious concubine that he purchased, Makaira. Now, Makaira was actually lovers with Zifos for a while, but
it's
then
so
she was
interesting.
Yeah. She gets around, by the way. So she was sold to Badanah to be his concubine, but she's the daughter of a genie, and she is like very ambitious, and she has her own machinations that she wants to put into play.
Yeah, she's not going to settle.
No, not at all. And so Badanah, you know, he actually ends up having a son named Faramarz. And Faramarz and Makaira, they start seeing each other. So he starts having sex with his father's concubine.
It's on brand for this game, though. Let's be
totally
real.
Totally, yeah.
It is very on brand, but also Eskimo Bros.
No.
As father-son.
They become lovers, and while they become lovers while plotting to kill the king Badanah. So Faramarz and Makaira, they trick Badanah into going into this unstable tower, and he dies. But Faramarz was technically too young to rule, so the throne was basically available for someone to rule it as regent. Mm-hmm. And so Badanah's one of his brothers, which would be Faramarz's uncle, his name was Minister Balash. He takes control of the throne, but then his other uncle, Grand Tutor Goraz, he's like, no, I want in on this power grab. So he raises this army to fight his own brother Balash and restore Faramarz, his nephew, as ruler, which he does. Then he like moves, you know, Faramarz into Tule Tula, which is where this was taking place. And then Goraz and Makaira rule as co-regents while Faramarz is coming of age.
Isn't it weird, though? Like, isn't the whole point of, like, the first uncle being appointed a regent that, like, Faramarz is going to take back over? Like, it was very weird that this uncle was like, nah.
It was weird. But Balash was also the ruler of Tule Tula at
the time. That's true.
So it was kind of just like reverted to him because Faramarz was too young. But yeah, Goraz is like, oh, let me grab this power and, you know, put my nephew back in. But really, he was doing it for himself. And Makaira was just like, I'm fine with it as long as I get to rule too. So Goraz, no surprise, eventually exiles Faramarz and marries Makaira and claims the throne. The people don't like this because they were fond of Balash. So they rebel and they kill Goraz. Makaira is forced to offer his severed head to the people to appease them. And then Faramarz is brought back in and reinstated as ruler.
I hate it.
And he's just like, oh, hi, Makaira. So meanwhile, the city of Saleh is like over there, you know, with the warrior city. They eventually rebel against everything that's going on over in Tuli Tula. They decide they're going to make a play for the throne. They're like, these clowns can't get their stuff together. We're going to take the King of Kings throne. So they start infighting. There's like 12 uncles involved that are like rising up to try to claim the throne. And a full-blown like civil war breaks out. It creates like really bad turmoil all over the region. Fast forward a few years, the war eventually ends, and then Faramarz is once again placed back in power after a bunch of the Sali people
kill each other.
Yeah, so meanwhile, he gets back in power. He's not trusting of Makaira, and he kills her with deadly viper venom 3 days after he takes power back.
Yeah, because the idea is like she kept switching sides, and he was like, you're not a trustworthy hoe. You're just a hoe.
Right, you just want the throne. And, just you know, I should have figured that out when I conspired with you to kill my own father.
Also, just a note that she's, like, basically described to be a dancer.
Yeah, she's a sword dancer.
Yeah. We all know where we're
in
going.
My head, I was like, she was Nilu. And I was like, Nilu, when is your time?
When I was reading it all, I'm like, oh, my God, this is Nilu.
I'm wondering if she's one of Lillipar's children. Like, just a secret daughter of Lillipar.
I mean, it would make sense. Lillipar, how many kids?
Hundreds and thousands.
And she was hoeing it up all over the place.
Not really hundreds and
I mean,
thousands,
it probably was badillions.
Badillions.
I mean, didn't we just say that's how the djinn procreate? They just, like, blink and a child appears? Like, blah,
children. That's my triplet.
I mean, it's possible. That kind of reminds me of the story of Cleopatra kind of ousting her brother husband.
Not the brother husband.
Yeah.
Stop.
Well, there is something very Cleopatra going on with her, with like the viper poison, right?
Exactly. And I can't remember if that's how she killed her younger brother. I think so. Because for a minute they were married and then he kind of cast her out. And she was kind of an exile while her younger sister kind of took her place. And then the whole Julius Caesar came and, you know, helped her and all this stuff. But it is very Cleopatra-like. And I love all these parallels. I'm torn between so many things just through the storyline of like Lillipar's children. And you know what? I'm here for it. But we can stop the incest.
Yeah, no more incest, please.
I wish Lillipar was like, instead of, let me just matchmake my children together, how about you matchmake your children with different genies you did not create?
What's the fun of that?
Have you seen that really old show, Love Connection?
I think so.
It's like an old dating show. I just imagine Lillipar hosting that, but it's her own children that she's setting up on dates.
Oh my God.
You've heard of Love is Blind. How about Love is Blood?
Oh, shit.
It's just happening at a family reunion.
Families who date together.
Stay together. And rebel together. Decapitate heads together. Put people's eyes on chopsticks together.
Jesus.
Yeah. So Makaira, she's dead. You know, Faramarz was done with her. Meanwhile, the slave warriors and the city dwellers of Saleh, they like start conspiring together. And then they exile Faramarz again to the rainforest. And so he's like done. Like he's out of the desert. Gone. And that's kind of where things start slowing down. Now there's this old blind man. They just sort of refer to him in the lore as the old blind poet. And it's unclear exactly who he is. I think it's implied that he was one of Makaira and Faramarz's advisors who later got blinded in all the fighting that was going on. But I think he's actually King Saleb, who's still alive.
Ooh.
Because he's blind and it calls him like a general who you like there's different things if you look at the lore behind the old blind poet. that really make it make sense for him to be King Saleb, who like just basically started wandering the desert after he was blinded and like really reflecting on his life and like the cruelty of the desert people and everything. But there's this really kind of poignant, I think it's one of the obelisk descriptions that like he's the one that chiseled it, and he vows to abandon the desert and all kingship, and vows that the desert people will march to the edge of the desert and create a new land to honor the gods and await for the revival of Deseret. And that, of course, would later become Aru village. And one other interesting thing about that old man is that he had an apprentice named Zephos, who was a surviving prince who disguised himself as a wanderer or a servant, which is the only way he sort of survived the downfall of his own kingdom. Zephos, like I mentioned earlier, he actually stayed in Tuli-Tula and served as its protector for a long time until he was eventually murdered by a mercenary that was hired by one of the other city-states. And then without Zephos's protection, Tuli-Tula eventually kind of withered away. And that's kind of the end of the story of the desert. I also think, by the way, that Zephos is Lilipar's son, or could be Lilipar's son, because he carried around like the key of Khaj Nizut, or whatever that weapon is, which is supposed to be like proof that you can enter like the kingdom of Deseret or whatever. And he was said to have been blessed by the djinn. So just my own personal theory on his history.
Interesting.
But yeah, that is what I gathered from the final saga of the desert as it like fizzled out.
And from my readings, there's not a lot of history that matters, quote unquote, between then and right. present day Teyvat. Like, it seems like people kind of ruled.
Yeah, they kind of just like abandoned the desert. I mean, it just sort of became run by the Aramites after that.
Which kind of makes me curious, and maybe we'll find out in future story quests or as more lore gets undug, which is ironic because sand. But I'd be very curious of like when the people of the desert truly began to be like segregated. Like, when did that wall get built? Was that done by Ruka Devada?
I thought that was done by the sages, no? Of Sumeru City?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like it was to keep them out of there, so this way they would stop going to research Deseret and research
forbidden knowledge.
That, remember that one, his kid died? It's Sino's story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He put his own son into prison because he went over there and was doing all the research and stuff because it was supposed to be that you could bring somebody back to life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that's one thing that's just a big no-no everywhere.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure I'm remembering this correctly, but I was under the impression that the wall was put up because the academia sages, they wanted to keep everyone segregated to maintain power over the region.
So I guess my question is then, when did the sages decide that they were going to be total asshats? Was it when they locked Nahida up?
Yeah.
Like, is this like a post-cataclysm?
I think it was just a gradual like display of power corrupting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When I was reading something about Tuli-Tula, I saw them talking about like the flood in Remuria.
Yes. So that is something that was interesting, that when we did the Lilipar episode, I don't remember seeing this, and I might have just missed it, but they might have also gone in and added it after Fontaine came out. But yeah, so when Gurabad fell, if you remember the end of that story of the Lilipar saga, you know, Shirye, Lilipar's grandchild, kills his father, but then he falls into a hole, it said. There's like poison and affects the entire city, or half, like kills half of the people, something like that. Like, it was kind of vague about what exactly happened. There was one account that the city itself just like fell into the ground, but you know, another made it just seem like the people were poisoned by some kind of plague. But I found out researching this episode that the Remurian flood was called the Great Plague by scholars.
Yeah, I remember reading that too, and it brings a lot of questions because it's like, I don't know the timeline of Remuria because I'm not as deep diving into it as you have, Brandon. But like, how long ago was the flood? Do we know? So like, was it 500 years ago? Was it it was pre-cataclysm. We know that much.
It was pre-cataclysm. It had to have been at least 1,000, if not more than 1,000 years ago. I did find one thing. I think it was in Zufos's Moonlight weapon description that is talking about, you know, the era of Zufos and this whole sort of decaying desert era. And it said that was thousands of years ago. But there was something else that I found that was talking about, I think it was something involving Makaira and Adana. I could be wrong because I tried to go back and find it and I couldn't find it. But there's something else that says it was 1,000 years ago. So we have one thing saying 1,000. We have another thing saying thousands of years ago. So I'm assuming it's like
somewhere in there
between like 1,000 to 3,000, something like that. But it makes sense because the King Remus, I believe, was like around the timeline as Deshret. So it would make sense if Deshret's death coincided with the Remurian flood that also took out King Remus. You know what I mean?
Which also suggests the possibility of an overall catastrophe happening across Teyvat and everything being... Yes. Yeah, like it would make sense if...
Like another cataclysm. Yeah,
and which goes into the bubble universe theory. If King Deshret got forbidden knowledge from the goddess of flowers, all hell broke loose across Teyvat, but no one was really able to put two and two together because they weren't really as interconnected as they are today. Like, not saying that they have, you know, the internet like we do, but they had better communication devices now. And I would be curious to see what happened in other nations.
Well, they kind of did have the internet, if you think about it. They had the Akasha Terminal.
Yeah.
Well, that's newer, is it? Well, I guess that's Lord Ruka Devata, so it depends on when she made that, right?
Right, yes. Yeah, we know she made it, but we don't know when exactly. I think she actually might have done that after.
And we know only Sumeru people have that.
Right.
And me. I have one. I ordered it online.
I didn't do it.
I want them to dive into my brain. But my question would be, like, what was the issue in the other nations then? And was that during the Archon War? Because we know that, it would have to be right after the Archon War, because we know that Deshret, Ruka Devata, and Nabu, like, were vibing during the Archon War. They ruled together.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking, like, right after the Archon War or at the end of it this happened. So I'd be very curious to see what it aligns to. Like, is it aligning to Urabashi in Inazuma? Is it aligning to, like, when Guizhong died?
Wait, does it align with the rebellion in Mondstadt?
Exactly. Is it aligned with the Lawrence Clan Rebellion and Vanessa?
It's possible. Just because, I mean, a lot of things, for example, the flood is more of a natural disaster. That doesn't mean the rest of, like, that era's cataclysm couldn't be more political, per se.
And who says it's a natural disaster, too? Remember, they're the Hydro Nation that had to build themselves up because of issues with the tectonic plates.
Yeah. Which I'm like, what type of tectonic plate? It's not a divergent plate, and it's not a convergent plate.
Anywho,
other than like Gurabad and like going back to that, I don't know why I couldn't place like the physical location of Gurabad, but doing the research, it says that it's in the Valley of Lana Del Rey, in the Valley of Dahri, Dahri, which kind of is reminiscent to the Valley of Kings.
No, but I thought Gurabad was, I thought you like opened the gates to it or whatever after the chessboard. No, I thought that was Gurabad.
There's a door
in Wadi el-Majruj.
I mean, it could have been big enough to cover a larger area, but I thought that
was Gurabad. Yeah, because like you're in the chess pieces and then it teleports you to a place. But it's, if you walk out of there, it's an area where there's an obelisk, but there's also like, it's not too far from where there's a Sumer daily that happens all the time.
I think because there's the first Gurabad and the rebuilt Gurabad. I guess that's where I'm getting confused.
Well, that's like, it's even confusing because like you have the mausoleum of King Deshret, but then the Kai Nisut area where you go during the Jet Quest, that's where his throne was. And I'm like, why couldn't they just put his throne and the mausoleum together? Why does he get so much land in the desert? He's dead.
Which To bring it back to that point in the IRL stuff, because Gorobod, a lot of travelers have related this to the city of Gor or Gur. Some people spell it G-O-R, some people spell it G-U-R, but it has two names. And it's the city of Gor, but also Firuzabad, which kind of, I don't know, it made me think of like, there's two versions of this city and there's two versions of this city.
That's true.
And the fact that Ormazd is the supreme god of Zoroastrianism.
You know what I never thought about? Do you think the big giant chessboard has something to do with the third dissenter being chess pieces?
Probably. Oh my god. Probably. That makes so much sense.
Maybe the third dissenter really is Deshrit.
Yeah, maybe. Ooh. There was some interesting information about that chess set, but I think it had something more so to do with like, what is the river in hell?
Styx?
Yeah, I think it had something to do with like the river Styx, like the like a theme around that, which is interesting because all the way over to the east side, kind of near where the Weenut is, you actually have like something called the Passage of the Ghouls. So I have a lot of questions and I'm hoping that we'll get some answers because I feel like the next step in this long desert sequence is to talk about the Pari. And I hope the Pari will answer some more questions too about like when the sages came along, because we know that like over in the Pari land extension site, there was a sage that was like banished. So I'm hoping that in next season, maybe we get to talk more about the desert because it literally never ends. We can maybe get some more answers from that. But who knows? This game loves to not give us answers and just give us more questions. So I do think on that note, though, I think it's time to check out of the desert and check our mail from Kirara. We have a few messages this week, so I want to get into them because we don't have too much time left. So we're going to have three comments / questions from our fellow travelers. Our first comes from Shmiti. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. They messaged us on Instagram. And they said, thanks to y'all, I went down a Honkai Impact 3rd rabbit hole, started the game and started reading the manga, and I'm on the second eruption. Here's the thing.
Woohoo!
Here's the thing. We have Celine. Celine? S-E-L-E-N, Brandon?
Celine Dion!
Attacking...
Oh, they're talking about Siren.
Yes. Oh, thank you. So they said, here's the thing. We have Siren attacking humans from the moon with rocks, but her wing/coat thingies. Is she Paimon? I cannot rethink things because I've been listening to you and Brandon's theories about the Honkai universe.
Look what you're doing to people.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Brandon?
First of all, the second eruption manga is so good. So I'm so glad you're reading it. It's like very gripping. Is she Paimon? I mean, she could be. It's really interesting because those wing things are also present in Kiana. Like when, you know how there's the whole theory that the unknown god in Genshin is the Herrscher of the Void version of Kiana. So that sort of like, there's some design choices that was present in Siren that copies over to Kiana when she's the Herrscher of the Void, because Siren was the original Herrscher of the Void, basically. So I would think it's more likely that she's the unknown god. But I do like the idea that, you know, it is Paimon, because a lot of people also theorize that Paimon is the unknown god. So yeah, I'm definitely curious what you think when you finish reading that and as you make it farther into the game. Please keep us updated. I don't know about everyone else, but at least me and Vanessa would definitely love to know your thoughts.
I mean, I'm curious.
I like you, but I'm not curious. You can talk to me about everything else, though. I like your name.
Awesome. Our next message comes from Lumin, ? From Amanda. On Instagram, they wrote, I just recently started to hear about your podcast and I learned a lot from it and about the lore. I love listening. Remember when Dainsleif was in Sumeru and we had our dream about our sibling? Do you think that Dainsleif messed with the ley lines on purpose to cause our memories to phase into that memory?
That's a good theory.
I mean, I don't see why not, because we know for a fact that he was there at that event regardless. So I mean, he knows in a way kind of what our sibling knows.
Well, no, he wasn't with our sibling at that time back in the day. So Dainsleif doesn't seem to know much about that memory.
Because he was almost trying to figure it out, wasn't he?
That whole Kari Bear storyline, that wasn't that when, like, what caused our sibling and Dane to sort of part ways?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So maybe I think it's a really good theory because maybe he did do it on purpose because maybe he's trying to figure out what our sibling is up to and why they stopped hanging out with him.
I think it definitely is determined by what you think Dainsleif's motives are, because we know Dainsleif knows about the Loom of Fate.
Did you say Fate?
Loom of Fate. Yeah, I did say Fate.
I said Fate. I was just like waiting for George Michael to start singing.
We know that Dainsleif knows about the Loom of Fate. We don't know how he's figured it out, though. We learn a little bit about that in the chasm. So I'd be interested to know in like what people think his intent is. Because if his intent is to find out more about our sibling and he does have those powers, I think it's definitely possible. But I also think you're giving Dainsleif credit about being able to manipulate the ley lines, where it feels like even Lisa can't do that. You know, Lisa's always complaining about how the ley lines are messing with her hair. So I'm sure if she could control the ley lines, she would.
Priority.
Yeah. Hey, I get it.
I mean, he says that he, at that time, he leaves us because he's going to look at ley lines that have been like basically acting up. So maybe it wasn't even like an intentional manipulation, but him going and like fiddling with it and like trying to figure out what was going on maybe caused a little like rift where the memory was then able to spawn to us. Mm-hmm. So he may have like not necessarily had the ability to do it, but was like, let me see if maybe this happens.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe his half curse allows him to do things. I mean, he also like likes to run through abyss portals,
yeah.
You know, for fun. So
I also want to say, when I was saying that he was fiddling with the ley lines, my picture in my mind was him like prying open that like the actual blossom and like sticking his head in. So that's a visual for you.
That just reminds me of, do you guys remember those times when, oh God, James would go into, like, Victory Bell would eat him? Just his head?
Yes.
The giant thing.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's in Pokemon.
The, truly, truly a weird vor fest, that one. But that's what I thought about when you said that. Or what's the movie that has the living plant that eats people?
Little Shop of Horrors?
Suddenly Seymour.
Yes!
So who was our third letter?
Yes. So Lumine, thank you so much for your answer.
Thank you, Lumine.
A fellow celestial traveler? We want to know.
When did you descend? We need
when
to know.
When did you descend?
When you descended.
Are you the playable twin or the Fibis twin? But thank you. Our last question comes from Akali. I apologize if I am pronouncing that wrong. From our inbox on talesofdevoutpod@gmail.com. And they said, I love your podcast because of how much you make the lore easier to understand for me. The first time my friend told me about the lore, I was like, what the fuck? But I love podcasts, and I was just curious if there was a podcast about Genshin lore. And lo and behold, there it was, Tales of Teyvat, my savior podcast. I did just have some random comments on some of your videos, though. Comment number one, yes, Dodore is bad. I agree. Their second comment. And
I love that. It's nice and simple.
I mean, it's the truth. He's the worst.
It's gonna really fuck us all up when he turns out to be like a good guy.
No, yeah. No,
stop
no,
that.
He cannot.
I hear he might have a redemption story happening.
No. That man has been an enemy since the manga. He doesn't deserve a redemption arc.
I mean, just like Child, no redemption.
Child has redemption.
No.
Dodore experiments on Scaramouche, experimented on Kale, tried to steal the children of Mondstadt.
He didn't try, he did.
Well, not all of them. He tried to legally steal them. Anyway, and the second part, and by the way, Bees, I've saved up 30 pulls for Kazwa. I am so ready for the baby. I'm 64 pity and guaranteed for my next character. So yay!
Yay, congratulations. By the time you hear this, you will probably already have him. So I'm
Fingers
excited for you.
crossed. Hopefully, we're
Hell
putting it out
yes.
there for you.
Yeah, you gotta let us know.
Be sure to zoom in and look for the cute little gap in between his teeth.
Yes. Oh my God. Our friend Maury told us about the gap in the teeth, but she Snapchatted me about it. So this was like maybe like right before it got popular on like Twitter. And she Snapchatted me a picture of his teeth and put a text box saying, "Oh my God, does he have a gap in his teeth?" But it was right over his mouth in the picture. And I was like, "Broski, how do I know you blocked it? I can't see anything." Like,
He's that iconic. He's just like Madonna, you know.
anyway, thank you so much, Akali, for your comments and for the love. Thank you, everyone, for writing in. Remember, you can feel free to email us at talesoftabatpod@gmail.com to let us know what you think of this week's episode or what you'd like to see in the future. You can also give us some of your comments, theories, questions, thoughts, hate, love, comments on Dottore, boo, whatever you want. You can also do the same thing by following us on Tales of Teyvat Pod on Instagram or Tales of Teyvat on Twitter. Next week, we are going to be talking all about the Narcissin Cruise saga in Fontaine, which has been highly requested by travelers across the globe or across Teyvat, whatever you prefer. Until then, travelers, safe journeys. We'll see you next time.
Bye, Daenerys
I'm
I've never watched Game of Thrones.
You
really?
need to!
Well,
Well,
you basically just experienced it.
Yeah, I feel like I did.